Hello, my name is Dave Emery. This is side one of For the Record 542, titled Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Catching Up with the Boys in Florida. This is being recorded on February 26th of the year 2006. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to be joined by investigative reporter and the author of two books, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, Daniel Hopsicker. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Pleasure to be with you, Dave.
This is our first visit in calendar year 2006. And before we get to updating a number of stories, a number of overlapping stories to a certain extent that you've been working on, why don't we give people a definition that will help with the title of the broadcast and also with an introduction to a number of different articles and books now that you've written that overlap to a certain extent, the boys. When we talk about the boys, who are we talking about?
Well, okay, let me tell you, but let me also give credit where credit is due. The title, Barry and the Boys, was coined by a CIA operative named Gary Idle up in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know if you've ever had occasion to speak with Gary, but he's an extremely bright individual, and he was doing a book. I don't know if the CIA sued him or not. But he was doing a book, and one of the chapters in the book was going to be called Barry and the Boys. And when I had my whole book done, he graciously allowed me to use it because it perfectly described what I was writing about. Now, the boys is a colloquial expression for those individuals, that group of individuals, that cabal that came together and took power in the U.S. with the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy and seems to have been able to hang on to power for the last 40 years, for the next 40 years. It's a group large enough to include people like Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and slick super lobbyist Jack Abramoff. It apparently has links to quasi-Christian individuals and organizations. And when I say quasi-Christian, I say it is because I do not believe these folks are true Christians or even believe themselves to be true Christians, but use it as cover. And we can see that clearly today. I just found out last week that our friend, I say that in quotes, Wally Hilliard, the flight school owner to whose flight school so many terrorists went, has registered a new corporation in Florida, and is operating now as the West African Children's Charity.
Hang on, Daniel. I'm reaching for my squeegee to wipe the tears away, because this sounds like something that truly we'll get to the very substance of human suffering and redemption. So Wally Hilliard is in the soul-saving business now, huh? He's going to help out with the suffering folks of Africa?
Well, he needed a car. I mean, he's been operating in Africa for quite some time in ways that I am not fully aware of, because I'm only one person on a very limited budget and have really only been able to cover the Florida end of it. But while I was investigating him for Welcome to Terrorland, I became aware that he was making regular flights to South Africa, that he had an interest in South African orchids. I bought an orchid for a friend of mine today, so I have orchids on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between orchids and orchards is escaping, you know, my mind at the minute. Wally Hilliard is active, and his jets have been active. Now, Wally Hilliard was a. Here are the boys. One of the boys will have a legend or a cover story to hide what he's really doing. I guess that's the essence of a spy, is it not? And here is Wally Hilliard's legend or cover story. He was a 65-year-old successful insurance executive from Green Bay, Wisconsin, who at the age of 65 retired to Naples, Florida. But rather than taking up golf and shuffleboard, as most retirees do down here, he, within a year, owned a fleet of 30 to 40 jets, which were flying all over the world.
And the story of who was on those planes, and perhaps even more importantly, what was on those planes, is the primary focus of Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida. Daniel, one of the things that's striking about the articles that are available on Mad Cow Morning News website, one of the things that's striking about reading those articles in conjunction with the subject material of Welcome to Terrorland, and also one of the things that is interesting when one reads your articles and Welcome to Terrorland, and then runs that back or references that back to Barry and the Boys, is that there are common elements, that there are certain evidentiary tributaries running between many of the elements in these at least ostensibly disparate stories. And beyond that, it's obvious that you are, in a broader sense, delineating, highlighting, illustrating, investigating a superstructure or an infrastructure which is at one end completely criminal and antithetical to everything this society is supposed to be about. It is involving drug trafficking, corruption of all kinds, and ultimately moving through that corruption terrorism, such as the milieu of September 11th, which is inextricably linked with this clandestine network. And yet at the same time, at the other end of that superstructure, that infrastructure, one sees luminaries, some of the most powerful and at least at one point in time esteemed people in our society, people like Tom DeLay, one of the primary Republican operatives in Washington, his lobbyist ace, Jack Abramoff, and other people, Randy Duke Cunningham, and a whole host of names. And we're going to be talking about some of these names during the course of this broadcast, but tell us, you're going to be coming out with new editions very soon of both of your books, both Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland. I wonder if you would discuss that with us and perhaps, if possible, give us a little foretaste of the new information that's going to be in there.
Well, sure. There's going to be several new chapters in Welcome to Terrorland, perhaps a new chapter in Barry and the Boys as well, but that's already stuffed with more information than most people can digest. I'm told there's way too many names in both of my books for casual reading, unfortunately. But the world, one leads right into the other. Of course, Barry and the Boys was the story of the biggest cocaine smuggler in American history, Barry Seal, who I discovered had been a lifelong CIA agent who had participated in flying arms to Fidel Castro when the CIA supported him in the mountains, then arms to anti-Castro Cubans when the CIA turned on Fidel Castro. And then Barry Seal had flown a getaway plane out of Dallas, Texas, after the assassination of JFK.
And somebody,
and
by the way,
had a role in Watergate. His role in Watergate was to he was involved in an arms for heroin deal the heroin would then have been turned into cash, and the cash would have gone into Richard Nixon's pocket for use in the ostensible use was to keep the five Cubans arrested in the Watergate quiet. They needed hush money for the Cubans. And this was the Mexican connection, by the way. This was what was referred to on the tapes as the Mexican connection. Anyway, so then we move through Barry Seal's life, and he becomes the biggest cocaine smuggler in American history. And that story ends, and I'm waiting in New Orleans for the book to come out when September 11th happened. And came down here 3 months later. And where the story of September 11th ties right into the story of Barry Seal is in the fact that I discovered while I was here that the owner of the flight school to which Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, his bodyguard, just had to come, the owner of that flight school had his Learjet confiscated by DEA agents the same month Atta and Marwan arrived, perhaps by coincidence, and the DEA agents searched the plane and they found 43 pounds of heroin on board. Now, I understand heroin is the chief export of the country of Afghanistan, and I understand Afghanistan is where Osama bin Laden was said to have lived. So it becomes clear that this intelligence/drug trafficking operation was being run in this country, has been run, I mean, all the way up to the present day, and that someone with cachet and the ability to pull the levers of power in the U.S. government was doing business with Osama bin Laden's people right up until September 11th. And that had it not been for the heroin trafficking business that we were doing with Osama bin Laden, Muhammad Atta and his thug buddies might not have been allowed to be here in the U.S.
One of the things that I want to underscore for listeners is that when one reads Daniel's two books out so far, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, again, perhaps some of this is whipping a dead horse, but you're investigating a milieu that is obviously overlaps the intelligence community in a big way, is involved with drug trafficking and other big-time criminal activity. And the scope of the unfolding historical events goes from basically things taking place in the later Eisenhower years, right on up through the milieu of the assassination of President Kennedy. Barry Seal was in the same Civil Air Patrol unit as Lee Harvey Oswald and David Ferry, whom the House Select Committee on Assassinations recommended the Justice Department should investigate. And then it moves right on up through, as you indicated, Watergate, the Iran-Contra affair, and Barry Seal's murder during the course of the unfolding of the investigation into Iran-Contra. Then, as you mentioned, you were in New Orleans when that book, awaiting the publication of that book. And September 11th happened. You make it over to Florida, start looking into the background of the activities of the hijackers who were based in Florida. And once again, you come across the intelligence community. You come across intelligence community connected drug trafficking. And one of the things that was striking in reading September or Welcome to Terrorland was that many of the people, many of the aircraft, some of the same operations you'd focused on in Barry and the Boys, also crop up in the background of Mohammed Atta and company. So in a sense, your investigations of Barry Seal, your investigations of Mohammed Atta, and some of the investigations of some of the people currently occupying the kleptocracy in Washington all overlap to a considerable extent. They're all part of a larger criminal-slash-political milieu that, to a certain extent, appears to be impervious to investigative efforts, or to I shouldn't say investigative, because it can be investigated, as you've demonstrated, but to correction by law enforcement or civic authorities.
Yeah, I mean, you said a mouthful there, didn't you? Here's how I've been thinking about it lately, Dave. It's all one world. It's a secret world I'm investigating, and I'm investigating it because at a certain point I realized I had not been allowed to know anything, the real truth, the real story about any of the major national events that had occurred in my lifetime,
mm-hmm.
From Vietnam to Kennedy assassination to Watergate and on up to Iran-Contra, and I just had within myself a desire to, at some point, know what was going on because I kind of felt it was my right. I mean, I'm allowed to know what's going on in my personal life, but when it comes to, you know, the activities that affect, you know, the humanity, I'm not. So I began to investigate the secret world, and it has led me to a reconsideration of definitions. Follow me here for a minute. What is a spy? What does a spy do? I've been thinking about those questions. Let's look at it this way. What is a mobster? What does a mobster do? Now, if you ask the question, what does a mobster do, you might say he kills people, strong-arms people, runs illegal loan rackets, run down through a lot of things that, you know, particulars of his profession. But what he does more than anything else is he makes money. He makes money. And good earners rise in the organization. Okay? He makes money. So when we come to the question of what does a spy do, all the things you might think of as James Bondish, protect the country against foreign penetration, et cetera, may actually have some reality. That may well be part of the job description, but a large part also of the job description of a spy is, you know, or at least many of them, I think, is they make money too. They are earners. They are in position to control a network, say from Miami, of foreign drug smugglers and heroin providers and Middle Eastern potentates and people looking to get oil deals in Kazakhstan. Okay, the whole secret world that exists behind the other world. So I think what the experience of both Barry Seal and now the covert intelligence activity that was going on when Mohammed Atta was here, I think, you know, clearly a large part of what these people do is like what ordinary people, they make money. They make money by running illegal rackets, running protected drug trafficking networks, for example, which is what both Barry Seal and Wally Hilliard and Rudy Deckers manifestly did. And the thing about that upsets me, I try not to be upset because that leads, you know, social activists, I think, are wonderful people. I've had to divorce myself from, you know, because if you expect results from any amazing secrets you turn up, you're inevitably disappointed, aren't you? So I have a curiosity, and I try to look at it just from the point of, you know, what was going on there? So Wally Hilliard and Mohammed Atta were an interface between a drug trafficking, an Islamic drug trafficking network led by Osama bin Laden and his people, and the purchasers and distributors of heroin in the U.S., who tend to be mobsters, at least that's been my understanding to date. And Naples, Florida would be a real good place to run that trade from.
Mm-hmm. So there are new editions of both Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland in the wings, so to speak, in the immediate offing.
Yes, there are. And I have several pieces of major new information. I mean, if you'd like, I'll reveal one to you.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, if you could sort of whet the listener's appetite and also bless this broadcast with a scoop or two here, because that certainly it will give people not only something to ponder as they await the publication of the two paperback editions, but it also might help sell a few books. And by the way, we should stress, I don't get any money from this, so this
no,
is
well,
not a...
Well, this let is, me tell you, yep. Dave, I have been touched. I've written several times on my website about our need for money to pay our lawyers. I was happy to be making, you know, enough to move from month to month, and you know, perhaps to aspire to assistant, you know, manager McDonald's status financially. But then when a $1,000 law bill a month came along, I mean, I threw up my hands in virtual literal despair. And so, first of all, I'm very grateful to all of your listeners, and I'm sure probably, you know, both the bulk of them are, people that have sent me $5, $10, you know, via PayPal. I mean, you know, little people like you and me who have shown their appreciation for what I do, we do, through contributions. It's been great. I mean, it's been touching, actually. It makes me feel like continuing, as opposed to sometimes when I feel like I, you know, you're bumping your head against the wall. So in light of that, during the, you know, I'll reveal a scoop that because I don't think this, you know, anyone from NBC is listening, you know, I can tell you, I was at depositions this week. I was being sued by a German pilot who I had alleged in Welcome to Terrorland was an associate of Mohammed Atta's. And it turns out that this individual indeed very likely was, but not a close associate. There were two people whom Mohammed Atta, according to Amanda Keller, and by the way, there is a exclusive 19-minute video on the website currently where everything Amanda Keller had to say about what she saw Mohammed Atta and the German contingent do, you can watch it and judge for yourself. But according to Amanda, there were two European individuals whom Mohammed Atta called my brother. In addition to, you know, the Arabs. And he didn't call everybody his brother. He didn't call all the Arabs his brother, and he called very few of the Europeans he knew his brother. But there were two that he called his brother, and one was Jurgen, and the other was Wolfgang. And Amanda Keller didn't know the last names on either one of these people, but she knew one of them was, I mean, she knew him. She saw him. She partied with him, Jurgen and Wolfgang. During the course of this deposition, this individual, who I'm not going to name anymore because I'm operating kind of like a federal prosecutor would here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you give up, you know, somebody that Mohammed Atta called my brother, I'll stop writing about you. And I won't know your name anymore. It's a deal I'm happy to make, both because defending one of these suits all the way through would cost what it recently cost my friend Chris Milligan, which is $20,000-$30,000. And because that's how you get people to roll and talk about people who are the most important. Anyway, I'm halfway through the deposition of this fellow, and he is talking about Wolfgang, by the way, we had decided and named as a man named Wolfgang Boringer, B-O-H-R-I-N-G-E-R, a German pilot, naturalized U.S. citizen, living in Atlanta. And he had been with Mohammed Atta during the celebrated by now 3-day drug and booze fueled weekend in Key West, and he had attended along with two other individuals a meeting that Amanda said she was not allowed to go to. A meeting, two people flew down on a private plane to meet with Mohammed and these people at the Hard Rock Cafe, and all she knew is that when they came back from this meeting, they were all glum. She said glum. She said solemn. And in the context of the hilarity of the weekend, that made quite an impression on her. And, of course, when she told me that, I envisioned, you know, a situation in which everyone could come back from a meeting glum, and that would be a meeting when someone would fly in and say, "Hey, Mohammed, you remember when you pledged fealty to Osama bin Laden and said you would lay down your life, you know, anytime you were asked?" And Atta said yes, and the guy said, "Well, now's the time." I mean, it seems entirely consistent to me, at least, and of course this is speculation, but that this might have been a meeting at which at least Atta was discussing, you know, and seeing the upcoming reality of his own death. Okay, so that's where we are. In the course of, now Amanda was talking about Wolfgang, whose last name she didn't know. We discovered that Wolfgang Boringer had owned a flight school in Naples, Florida, and was reputed to be involved on the shady side of the law in one or two kind of interesting ways, along with seeming protection from people like Customs and the DEA, not the DEA, but the but immigration. We're halfway through the deposition. Amanda had said, you know, Wolfgang this, that. She said when Wolfgang came into the picture, he and Mohammed Atta were inseparable. They were always riding around together in Wolfgang's red convertible and going hither and yon together. They were inseparable, she said. So the other thing she had said about Wolfgang was that he was that he had told her one time that he had won his green card in a lottery. Now, when she told me that, he had won his green card in a lottery. When she told me that, I said, I couldn't believe it was true. I said, is that true? And she said, I don't know. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, they told this poor girl, I mean, they could tell this poor girl almost anything she'd believe them, okay? And they probably did play with their minds somewhat that way. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And I sort of thought, well, a green card lottery, that's nothing I had ever heard of. Had you heard of a green card lottery?
First to me.
Okay. So I'm halfway through the deposition of this individual in Naples on Thursday afternoon when he is talking about Wolfgang and telling us under oath what he knows about Wolfgang. And he says, oh, and Wolfgang won his green card in a lottery. And my blood ran cold because of that, I can sit here and tell you with absolute assurance, absolute complete assurance and proof that I have identified a naturalized American citizen, a German pilot by the name of Wolfgang Boringer, who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, today, who attended meetings with Mohammed Atta in the year before the attack, meetings in which the attack may well have been discussed. And I'll tell you, Dave, I don't brag very much, but I think I'm going to go down in history for this, because this is as big, I believe, as discovering 3 years or 4 years after the Kennedy assassination that Lee Harvey Oswald had hung out with the French guy with a little thin mustache, you know, 3-4 times in the month before the assassination. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, the
I'm stating for the record and publicly that Wolfgang Boringer, a German naturalized American citizen now, attended meetings with Mohammed Atta in the year before the 9/11 attack, and may well have, certainly has a knowledge of everything going on in the terrorist conspiracy, or most of the things going on, because he certainly was there often enough, and may well have guilty knowledge.
Well, you know, one of the things, setting a couple of background elements to sort of clarify things for listeners, if people are new to these broadcasts or if they missed some of our previous interviews, those, by the way, are all archived by sister station WFMU. In Florida, Daniel has written about Mohammed Atta's associates, which were a very interesting group of people. Not only are there a number of individuals and institutions that track back to the milieu of Barry Seal and the Iran-Contra related activities that he was involved in, but also a number of Germans and Austrians and Swiss who were hanging out in Florida and were obviously close professional and to a certain extent personal associates of Mohammed Atta. And there is at least some other discussion, Daniel. I remember there was an article in the LA Times where they were talking about somebody who had been an associate of Mohammed Atta's in Florida and was now being investigated and shunned by some. And people say, well, hey, wait a minute. How about all those Austrian and German people and Swiss who were coming through? You know, how come nobody ever talks about them? It's the only reference I've ever seen to that other than your work.
Well, see, there you go. And now you know why. Now you know why. Because Wolfgang Boringer wasn't a freelancer, okay? Wolfgang Boringer represented an organization called the Flying Club of Munich. And I'll be darned if they don't prove to be right up your alley.
The Flying Club of Munich, huh?
Flying Club of Munich, Dave. Can you believe this?
Well,
Wolfgang Boringer came here under the auspices of the Flying Club of Munich.
Interesting.
Well, there's something interesting about the Flying Club of Munich.
Well, just a name. I'd never heard this piece of information before, but a lot of the contemporary German Nazi groups, because they can't be officially Nazis, a lot of them, they're involved in things like, they call it the Sportgruppe, like the Sportgruppe Hoffmann was a famous German neo-Nazi group linked to the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980. And they have things like sporting clubs or hunting clubs. And it occurs to me maybe the Flying Club of Munich is one of those neat little clubs. What can you tell us about it?
Virtually nothing at this point, except that I think that over the course of the next year or two, God willing, Allahu Akbar, the Flying Club of Munich will become much better known than it is today.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a front.
The man I was deposing was extremely reluctant to discuss anything about the Flying Club of Munich.
Really?
He did reveal two pieces of information that I found pretty interesting.
Uh-huh.
I had been told that you know, I don't want to talk about him, but I had been told that his father was a Munich industrialist, and he said that was not true, that his father was actually just, first he said he was a cab driver, and then later he admitted he was a man who owned a cab company in the mid-sized German city that he grew up in. And when he was asked, and that was okay with me because I had just reported speculation. Someone said, oh, and I heard that, you know, and lacking anything else, I mean, I think that's fair game. Then when we got to the Flying Club of Munich, we asked who the owner of the Flying Club of Munich is and was, and he became very reluctant to talk. And all we were able to pull out of him was that the owner of the Flying Club of Munich also owns a large taxi company in Munich. So he owns a flight school and a taxi company. And that combination seems pretty curious.
Yeah, you bumped into a few of those down in Florida, haven't you?
Now let me tell you something. I mean, I'm sure you've... By the way,
Daniel, we're going to have to break here in just a minute. We're almost out of time
right,
on
well,
this
well,
side.
Let me get this, let me sure. get this out. The man who has written the most truthful books about the Kennedy assassination, in my humble opinion, doesn't write nonfiction but fiction. It's James Ellroy, whose two books, Tabloid, American Tabloid, and The Cold 6000, seem to tell the story from the inside. And he makes a point in both books, but certainly the first one, in saying that the Soldiers of Fortune and Bay of Pigs adventurers, who he fingers as being responsible for actually pulling the trigger on Kennedy, also owned a cab company called Tiger Cab in Miami. And so owning a cab company would be great cover for spook activities, would it not?
Sure. Well, the thing, yeah, I mean, none of that, but if you own small airlines and flight schools and then dovetail that with cabs, you can run stuff all over. You can fly stuff into a small airport and then run it all over the place with your cabs. Daniel, let's pick this up on the other side of the broadcast. Very quickly, your website. You are coming out with paperback supplemented editions of both Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up with Florida. As I've indicated, both books deal with overlapping elements over a period of many decades. And in turn, that same milieu figures in the many investigative stories, which I hope we'll have time to touch on inside, too. Tell people where they can get those books.
My website's madcowprod, prod.com, or the Mad Cow Morning News, either one. And that's where my column is, and I try to do an investigative piece every week or two, and keep moving forward.
Sounds good. www.madcowprod.com. Keep your eyes peeled not only for Daniel's investigative pieces, and we'll touch on some of those, but also for new paperback editions, supplemented editions of both Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland. We've been speaking with Daniel Hopsicker, the author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, as well as numerous investigative pieces. And we will be talking about some of those in Side 2. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening to Side 1 of Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, Catching Up with the Boys in Florida. This has been recorded on February 26th of the year 2006. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.